Pull over, lean in. It's time for the Soft Shoulder Podcast. I am your host, Danette Relic of Radical Creative Sanctuary, inviting spaciousness for your mind and your heart. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. The Soft Shoulder is your time. Your time to slow down and fuel up on self-love support, so you can make the most of your gorgeous life. Join me here. Everyone needs a soft shoulder. Hello, sweet listener. Welcome to the Soft Shoulder Podcast. We have completed the Seven Houses of Heartbreak series, and now we are moving into other self-love topics. Today's topic is desire. What do you think of when you hear that word? When I hear the word desire, I often picture that script. I picture the font of a romance novel, like that curly, swirly, a big fat D. That's what I picture first. But there's lots of different stories of desire. And I feel like it's one of these words where, you know, when we're using it in a sentence, we all have different ideas of what it means and what it means to us. We haven't necessarily agreed upon the definition of this word. So we're going to talk a little bit about it today. And this is especially for those who have like maybe some resistance to it, or who are feeling a bit of a lack of desire right now. So I'm going to take you back in time. There's a few stories I'm going to tell you today. This one is my first confession. So I went to a Catholic school, and as part of that education, I had my first communion with my class, and then the second sacrament was at school was the first confession, which meant I had to probably learn some songs and get a little white dress and have a special service with my class where we would all one by one go up to the priest and confess our sins. Now, I didn't really have an option here because it was done through the school. So, you know, it was just what we did. And I like singing songs. So we're going through this whole thing, and I remember just like being really confused by the whole thing, like by the moment of the confession about what I was supposed to confess. In hindsight, I'm not sure we were coached very well on what that even means, but I remember going up to the priest, and this man, he was a much older man with a deep voice, and he was wearing his robes, and he bowed over me, and he put his hands, his two heavy hands, on my little shoulders. And he looked at me, and this is up on the, is it called a pulpit? I was going to call it a stage. I know it's not a stage, but that's what I'm thinking. Anyway, the right, the level up at the front of the church. Everyone's there. My family's there. All the other students, their families are there. He's got his hands on my shoulders, and he says, "Tell me your sins." And even though we'd been practicing for this in school for Lord knows how long, I just didn't have anything for him. I didn't feel like I had sinned. I didn't understand why, if I did, why I would tell him. I was very confused about this whole situation. And I kind of shrugged, and I think I told him I didn't have any, but his hands remained on my shoulders. And obviously this whole thing is called the first confession, so I have to do that as part of the contract, I guess. His hands were there. And so I knew, I'm like, I'm going to have to come up with something. And so I remember looking up at him and I said, well, and keep in mind, I'm like seven or something like that. So I said, well, I guess I could sometimes be a little nicer to my parents. And it was like formed as a question, like, does this pass? Are you going to take your shoulders, your hands off my shoulders now? And he did. He let me go. He did the sign of the cross. He let me go. I got to sit down. But all I could think about was what I really wanted, what I really desired in this day, which was I knew that after our first confession, my family was going to drive downtown Toronto and we were going to go to the organ grinder. Now, if you don't know what this is, I believe it was a chain. There are other organ grinders. But basically, this is like, I'm not even sure when it closed down. It's basically like a Chuck E. Cheese. It's like this pizzeria family restaurant with arcade games. But the big feature was a giant pipe organ. I cannot fathom how like a restaurant like that would launch today in Toronto. I just can't see the family going, let's all listen to the pipe organ and eat pizza. But it was a big deal and I loved it. And actually in thinking about it and preparing for this episode, I looked it up and I was like, did this really happen? Like I was so young when I used to go there. The specific organ at the organ grinder had a name. It was called the Mighty Wurlitzer. And the quote about this particular organ was, built from parts of over 50 different pipe organs dating back to the turn of the century, the Mighty Wurlitzer was an oral behemoth. Aren't those the best words? Oral behemoth. My God. Anyhow, it was huge. And I would walk up to it and I would always request, for Lord knows why, I would request Chariots of Fire. I just wanted to hear Chariots of Fire on this organ. I couldn't wait. So I'm standing up, you know, in this church and I'm just like, I just want pizza and Chariots of Fire. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to be surrounded by music in the way that you only can with an oral behemoth like the Mighty Wurlitzer. And I wanted to play and run in a restaurant and eat warm pizza with my family. And I wanted to embrace the joy and strangeness and celebration and love. Because even at that age, though I wouldn't put it into words, that felt like God to me. Even back then, that was where those moments, what I was desiring was that experience that felt magical and beautiful and holy. I wanted it. I desired it. And I didn't feel guilty about desiring that. Now, around the same time, I was also exposed to one of my first favorite movies of all time, which was Flashdance. And if you've seen Flashdance, you know there are several scenes of her in a confession booth, which of course was fascinating because we didn't get the booth. I was actually really hoping I would get to go into a booth. That's not how the first confession went. Jennifer Beals' character in Flashdance, she goes a few times through the film and it kind of progresses along. But one of those times, one of those confessions, she's breaking down. She's not calm. She's not reserved. She starts to crack. She starts to cry. And her confession is, I just want so much. Whew. And I remember as a child thinking, what? What is wrong with that? Why is she confessing wanting? Don't we all want things? This was blowing my mind. Also, she was talking about wanting and like her dream of being a dancer. And I remember even thinking like, why are you telling the priest, go dance, like just go dance, tell the trees, dance your heart out. This is your gift, Alex. It's your gift. Share it with the world. Like I just was so confused by this conflict that she was having. And now, of course, as a grown up, I get it. Desire is a good thing. And there are lots of people and sources that might tell us that it isn't. For me, it was, you know, church and confession booths. For you, it might have been your parents or any other. I mean, there's so many places where we get that message that we shouldn't want. We shouldn't want things. We should let go of desire and be happy with what we have. So, you know, years after the confession booth incidents, I was, you know, I'd be reading about Buddhism as, I don't know, my early 20s or late teens, and I'd come across a similar message about desire being a problem, about needing to let go of that. I should be happy with what I had. And that, like, reaffirmed this belief that was building that to be spiritual, I should be desireless. And this was a real conflict for me. Now, of course, this was just my interpretation of the messages I was being given, because there's a big difference between being desireless and being free from desire, from the clutches or attachment to desire. I didn't know that then. I know this now. But let me be clear. When I speak about desire, I am not speaking about attachment. I'm not speaking about compulsive consumption. I'm not talking about wanting something that belongs to others and taking it from them. I'm not talking about letting desire derail you from living your best life. Desire in itself is a good thing. Filling an empty hole by shopping, that's not the same as desire. Clutching onto a terrible idea out of fear and stubbornness, not the same as desire. And refusing to accept that the person you're lusting after does not feel the same way as you, that's not the same as just desire. That's not in itself a great thing. So what are we talking about? What am I talking about when I'm inviting you to lean into desire? It's this. Desire is the sign of your life force. A baby wants to walk, wants to crawl before it even can. You see it in their faces. The desire comes first. Desire is hope. Even if right now, maybe all you desire is hope, there's hope in that also. There's a tiny green sprig of life in that desire, just wanting it. Wanting it means there's, even in our like difficult times, there's a tiny, tiny, tiny seed that believes it's possible. You know, I read in Super Better, the game book about a gaming mindset by Jane McGonigal, that even if you're feeling horribly depressed, if you're playing Tetris, there's hope. Because we don't play a game unless there's some kind of promise of a win or some kind of promise of getting further or advancing. There's an inherent curiosity and optimism in that. So even the desire to feel desire again, that's it. It's there. Focus on that. You might not even be able to detect it. The push can be so slight, pushing into that direction of hope and curiosity. It doesn't mean it's not there. So imagine that it's there. Imagine that it's under the surface. If you're listening to this and you're just feeling like you're void of it, I think the fact that you're listening to this shows that there's some desire in you. You wouldn't have clicked play on this episode if there wasn't. So imagine that it's there under the surface, your life force. Another way recently that reminded me that desire is a life force, it's like a spark of your fire, is because someone asked me, it was a little while back, but they asked me how I'm doing, how my brain injury healing is going. And I tried to describe it as, you know, there'd been this new rush of energy and, but not necessarily the capacity to handle it and to manage it. So that's like, you know, this new place that I'm in. So I said to them, you know, I'm at the phase where, you know, when you start craving whole pizzas after you've had like the stomach flu for a bunch of weeks, you know, at first, like the sight of food makes you feel disgusting and you can't even like, you smell something and you're just like, oh, I can't handle it. And then at some point, the hunger comes back, the desire for food comes back. And that is like so exciting, even though, you know, if it's like the flu and you're like, oh my God, now I want a pizza. And your body's probably like, slow down there, Danette, because, you know, let's just try a dry bite of toast. That's great that you have the desire. We don't need to act on all of it, but that's, you know, you're just going to make yourself. So that was sort of where I'm at brain injury wise. It's like, I want to do all these things and I still need to, you know, take my metaphorical dry bites of toast and take things slowly in a way that my body can handle and process. So that's how I answered my friend's question. But what was important was for me to notice the desire, because the desire to do more is new. And that in itself is a sign of healing. So even if you can't act on it, the desire is, it can be in itself a sign of healing. So speaking of which, let's look a little bit at sexual desire, because I think there's a relationship here. And I know that many of us have, you know, well, definitely different experiences with sexual desire, with our levels of arousal, our libido, how we identify as sexual beings. And I think it's really important here to separate the desire from the arousal. Like, I think that's a place where a lot of people conflate the two, thinking of sexual desire as like you're just hungry and ready. But that's not the same thing. Desiring and being ready is not the same thing, right? Like, think about the pizza and the flu, right? It's like, I wasn't ready to eat the pizza. I wanted the pizza, but that wasn't going to happen. You know, so like, think about what that would take the pressure off, right? If you're in some kind of like a dip from what you're used to or from what you would like for yourself sexually, and you're not really feeling it a whole lot, what if you took that pressure off of your body to respond like a horny teenager? What if you didn't have to be super turned on to acknowledge and be curious about your sexual desire? Right? Think about that for a second. Without the performance, without needing to act on it, wouldn't it be interesting to be like, huh, even if you have a fully active sex life right now, you can still want more, right? Doesn't have to be that you're in like, you know, a quiet period sexually. It could be just like, oh, is my desire changing? Is my desire growing? Is my desire to quiet things down? Think about your desires as hints of something that's like exciting and new. Something that's always changing. What might you want for yourself sexually? Just start there. And what if you did want more or something different? What if you let that be true? And you just let the body do whatever the body wants to do. Do you pay attention to those desires? Desire shifts our focus, doesn't it? It really shifts the energy. It shifts the direction ever so slightly sometimes, which can make a huge difference. You know, this is why it's so important, listener, to be curious about yourself. Self-love is, you know, to love yourself, we need to know ourselves, right? Like, we get to know people, we fall in love more with them when we know them. So this is why any activity that you can do that's self-exploratory, any personal growth books, any like anything that you're doing to go, huh, do I like this? Do I not like this? What makes me upset? What makes me happy? How do I like to do these things? Being curious and paying attention to this is you getting to know yourself and getting to know what you truly want. Because if you're going to lean into desire, well, it better be the one that you really want. Right? And if you're disconnected from that in yourself, you might find yourself desiring something to fill a void or to please other people. Whose desires are they? Right? So, you know, that's why I say it can, you know, bring you to your biggest dreams. Desire can guide you right to them, or it can distract you. Because if you're acting on the desire for people pleasing, I really want everyone to like me. I really want my parents to never get upset. Well, that desire is going to take you in a certain direction. What is the true desire? When you ask yourself this, just keep going underneath it. Like, oh, I want to go to Paris. Huh? Like, well, what do I really want? What's important about that? Well, I really want an adventure. Well, what's important about that? What do you really want? You can just keep distilling it down. You might find that you actually don't, I mean, go to Paris by all means, but you might get exactly what you want without ever getting on a plane. Don't underestimate the power of a little leaning in. It can literally change where you end up. I was doing these tests many years ago with this personal trainer, and we were doing this assessment in terms of where I carry my weight, where I lean, how aligned my skeleton was, basically. And it was really interesting. I'd never done any of these tests before. This was, gosh, it doesn't matter. It was a long time ago. But one of the tests was I had to put on a blindfold. He took me to this room that was all pads. It was all like a gymnasium thing. It was very safe. It was very big. And he stood far away from me after he put my blindfold on. And he told me that I just was to relax and just walk slowly in a straight line comfortably, and that, you know, I wouldn't bump into anything. He would take care of that. Okay. And I'm like, oh, this is fun. This is weird. Whatever. He knows what he's doing. So I put the blindfold on and I walked, and I was really focused on like, okay, I'm going to walk in a straight line. I mean, that's easy. So I did it. I walked in a straight line for like, I don't know how many paces, 20 paces or whatever. He's like, okay, stop. And I stopped. I felt like really smug, like, oh, I probably did such a good job of walking this straight line. I'm so aware of my body. He has me take off the blindfold. And I was facing an entirely different direction. I was facing a completely different wall. I had walked, if you drew a line under my feet, it was in like the shape of a rainbow. I had gone completely in an arc to one side without realizing it at all, while I was attempting to focus on my body and think that I was going in a straight line. But I didn't. And why? Because I was leaning slightly to one side. Don't underestimate the power of a little lean. It literally can change where you end up. And I think this happens too with desire. What we want, what we lean, what we pay attention to. It might not seem like a big deal in one day, but when you, you know, zoom out and you look at the course of your life with all of these little decisions, all of these little directions, being influenced by that, it really can change everything. The beauty of that is that, you know, in this personal training moment, I ended up where I didn't want to be. And that's a great story for me to remember, that if I bring consciousness to where I want to be, all I actually need to do is lean in. I can take the pressure off of giant leaps and bounds. I can just lean into it. That's powerful enough. So the word desire, like I said, when I first pictured, I picture that, you know, romance novel script, desire. And like, it feels like it's like, oh, this feels like a splashy word. It should be fun to experience desire, but it can also be painful. And I want to talk a bit about the disruption that it might have. Have you ever been in a creative or sexual slump and you see someone who is over the moon? They're dripping with embodied creativity and confidence. They have everything you don't have in your slump. It can be really hard to see people that way. You know, you probably feel this, you know, that's where one of the ways that we experience like FOMO on, you know, social media. You see other people having what you want and you feel this gap of inadequacy of like so far away to what I'm perceiving over here. It's a little different when it's online than in person, but all the same, you don't really know what's going on over there, but you see an image of something you want. And it can be really hard because what you see and feel is that gap between where you are and where you're perceiving they are. I have had so many moments like this where it can feel really awkward and stiff and vulnerable to even start, right? Like starting doesn't look the way I want it to feel. I want it to feel easy. I want to be there already. But these things take time. That can be difficult. It'll ask you a very important question. How much do you want this thing? Because, you know, you have to be willing to experience awkwardness and vulnerability often to bring this into your life. If you want to have like a really awesome, loving, hot relationship, you have to be willing to be vulnerable. You have to be willing to put yourself out there. You have to be willing to lose it. And if you're not willing to do that, then you're not going to. So how badly do you want this thing? That's why, like, when you have a goal, you have to connect with that emotional desire of it, because it will be so easy for you to give up. Why do you want this thing? What will it give you? It has to be worth it. Otherwise, you're not going to do it. You're going to be uncomfortable and you'll stop, which is understandable. You know, but that's why I think when, you know, you set a goal or something that you really love, desire is your friend. Really, really let yourself spend a lot of time thinking about why and how it's going to feel. Because you're going to face challenges. It asks a lot of you. About a billion years ago, I was at a music festival and I was outside sitting on the grass, and it was like day three of the music festival, and music's playing. I'm feeling really relaxed. I'm sitting in the sun and I see this woman, and she just took my breath away. She was absolutely stunning in the way that she was in her body hula hooping to this music I was listening to. And I'd never seen at that time, this is a lot while back, I'd never seen an adult sized hoop. So hula hoops were things of the past, really small hoops from like birthday parties as children, but I'd never seen one of those beautiful giant hoops. And there she was in this like tattered, great little outfit that she just was dirty. This is like she was probably down by the river. She was like, just did not care. She had like mud on her. She was hooping. Her hair was a mess. She was hooping so slowly and so gorgeously, like it took no effort for her to do so. She was just rolling her head around, stretching. It was like she was a giant animal yawn just with a hula hoop. It was just beautiful. And I was so afraid to try. I think at even point she saw me and kind of waved. There was other hoops on the ground. And I said, no. I shook my head. I'm like, no, 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 no. I'm just going to sit here. I wanted it so much. I wasn't willing to embarrass myself, to get up and be bad at it in front of all these people. And it took a bunch of years for me to, like, I kept thinking of her. She kept coming into my mind. I was like, God, I really want to try that, but where? Where am I going to try that? What's going to happen? And years later, I found out there was a small hula hoop class going on with those bigger hoops. And I was like, and a teacher. And I was like, okay, this felt safer. There's still going to be other people in the class. So there's still this risk of embarrassment. I was still very nervous to take this class, but it wasn't like a music festival where everyone's just, you know, there's like crowds of people and no one necessarily there to teach me how to do this. So I get in this class, and the teacher, this lovely human named Sadie, starts the class by having us dropping the hoop several times onto the floor, because she said, you will be dropping the hoop over and over again. That's how we're learning. And the clattering sound of the smack of the hoop on the ground can feel horrible when you're trying to learn. So she normalized it for us. We're all just throwing our hoops on the ground, hearing that slapping sound, laughing to, you know, take the fear out of that, which was wonderful. And sure enough, that's what I was doing. I was attempting to just hoop around my waist. And, you know, it was not sexy. It was not like that girl at the music festival. It was a lot of like panicking and pumping and slapping the hula hoop down on the ground. So I wasn't loving it, but I just, at this point, the desire was strong enough. It had built over the years where like, I am going to make myself look a little foolish. I'm willing to do things badly. I'm willing to learn in front of others. And because I really want this. Now, at some point, after we'd hooped a little bit around our waist, I still didn't really have it, but I could get a few rotations. Then she taught us how to, if we slowed down, we could, the hoop would kind of gradually slip down and we could hoop with it around our hips and our butt. And then if we sped up, the hoop would rise again to our waist. I still nowhere near getting this, but you know, the class is moving along and she has us partner with someone else in the class. Now, this creates so much anxiety with me because it immediately brought back these memories from when I was in t-ball as a child. So I knew I wasn't great at this. And the exercise that we were doing with a pair is that one of us would be hooping on our hips while the other one hooping on their waist. And then we would hold that and step towards each other so that we could create like a little eclipse, like one hoop would just be above the other. And then we'd step away and then we would change. The person with the hips would pull it up. The person with the waist would let it slide down. And then we come back and eclipse again. Great exercise. I was not there. I was not there yet. And I'm partnered with this lovely person who was quite a great hooper. And I had noticed her in the class and I was like, wow, like now she was my new, like, I want to hoop with the grace and ease of this person. And she happened to be standing next to me. So now we're partnered. And I felt so bad for her because I knew that she wasn't going to be able to practice this, right? Like, because I was just going to keep dropping the hoop. And so she was mostly just waiting. It was like, you know, when I played t-ball and we would be paired off to play catch with other team members, no one wanted to play catch with me because you couldn't play catch with me. The only thing you were playing was throw and wait. If you were playing with Danette, it was throw and wait, not catch. You would throw the ball and then you'd wait for Danette to go running after it into a field and like pick a bouquet of flowers and come back at some point. Like I couldn't catch and I couldn't throw. So I feel terrible. I'm standing awkwardly next to this wonderful woman who's hooping so effortlessly. She had brought orange muffins to the class. Like she seemed to be just so relaxed and comfortable, and it magnified how awkward I felt. But you know, she was very patient and kind, and she allowed me to apologize, and she didn't, if she was put out, she did not let on. But who do you think this person was? This was Allison Tarr of Tech Coven. So even if I never learned how to hula hoop, that was worth it to go and get over myself and go to this class, because all these years later, Allison Tarr reads beautiful tarot readings. She is Tech Coven, and this podcast is brought to you by Tech Coven. Go to techcoven.com. You can check out what Allison is doing now, and you should know that she's just like a phenomenal hooper. And I'm so glad that I went that day. So this is another side note, that by leaning into your desire, you might be leaning towards a specific dream, but you don't know what else is going to happen. So many other wonderful things happen when you allow yourself to lean in that direction. And one of those things is who you're going to meet on the way. So with her help, I actually did hoop. She taught classes later on. I studied and hooped with her. And she got me to the point where we built on what Sadie taught me. And then I got to do this thing. It was my dream to have the hoop up around my rib cage while I like wiggled my arms in and out of the hoop and like spun around inside it. I couldn't believe that I was doing it. And even all these years later, I still think of that girl who, God, I wonder who she is or where she is. That woman from the music festival inspired this entire thing. And now the desire to hoop is back, because after I had my brain injury, I did try to hoop that spring. And very simple, never mind all the tricks and fun stuff, but just some very simple waist hooping was too much for me. And it activated all my symptoms. And I have not hooped since. And I haven't wanted to hoop since. But the desire is back. And so I'm celebrating that. It's like, oh, the desire is there. Maybe that means the ability has been, you know, restoring itself. And I can also this time try to hoop for just 2 minutes and put it down and see. Without exerting. So that is what desire is. It's something that wants expression through you. My desire to hoop had me hooping and dancing and moving around, and just, it doesn't have to be such a big and important thing. It's just an expression of life. And that's all desire is, something wanting expression through you. Think about it that way. Plants grow better when they're loved. So I've heard, at least when the right conditions are provided. And people do this too. We do better when we're believed in, when we're cultivated and cheered on, when we're understood. Love is encouragement to grow. Love is the right conditions. When you listen to your own desires, dear listener, and you let them be voiced, this is an act of self-love, because you are cultivating the life that seeks expression through you. You are sowing seeds that will one day bloom. What are your desires? Big and small, what is seeking expression through you? There's something in you that knows that more is possible, like a wildflower through a sidewalk. This force is strong, but also you can take the pressure off and you can remove obstacles. You don't always have to be going through the sidewalk, right? Like, you don't have to go through the pavement. All the better if you don't have to go through the pavement. You're capable of doing that, but it doesn't have to be that way. Desire can be disruptive, as I said. New life seeking expression is disruptive by nature. It disrupts the status quo. I was disrupted in that feeling of seeing that girl with the hula hoop. I was like, you know, I was disrupted. I was changed. I felt this gap. I was asking myself hard questions. Danette, what are you willing to do right now? And I'm, you know, using the hula hoop example because it's not, you know, are the consequences really serious? You know what? I don't even know. Certainly there are ones that are more obviously serious, but it felt really important. It disrupted where I was. It disrupted my comfort zone. It showed me that I was afraid of something, afraid of learning in public, afraid of looking bad. You know, if you're living that way, you might not even notice that you are. So new life-seeking expression, it's disruptive by nature. Plants, flowers, trees, imagine them all just bursting out of the earth. Like, they're bursting out. They're disrupting what's around them. They disrupt the seed. They disrupt themselves. They disrupt other things. Even when they're wanted, they're disruptive. These are welcome, miraculous acts. And yes, they're disruptive. So don't be surprised by this aspect of desire. Just be in awe of the disruption. And just as you create conditions for a plant to disrupt as smoothly as possible, you can also do so for your desires. How do you make space for your desires? Write them down. And just start with that one line, I want, I want, I want. Repeat it over and over again. I would love, I would really like, I want, I want, I want, whatever comes to mind. This is a fabulous exercise. Go for quantity. Go for 100 things that you want. And notice where it goes. Without, go for the quantity, not the quality. Do not judge them. Do not figure out how you're going to get it. Don't worry about it. Just practice wanting, especially if you are resisting this right now. Practice that. I want, I want, I want. And notice, maybe in the first half, pause and notice what category seems to be showing up, because you might want things in the world. You might want material things. You might want to learn things. What's showing up most? That's another fascinating thing to just notice. There's no hierarchy. Just notice and then diversify a little in the second half. What would you like to try? What do you want to learn? What do you want to wear? What do you want to build or make? What do you want to play? What do you want to master? What do you want to change? Dear listener, do not go to a confession booth and cry because you want things. Come to a coach and tell them what you want. I am here and I'm taking new clients this fall. You can sign up directly on my website, www.radicalcreativesanctuary.com. So much more is possible. So much life is seeking expression through you. You are both creation and creator. You are wildlife, dear listener, home and free. You are someone worth loving, and so is every single thing seeking expression through you. It all starts with you. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for asking yourself what you want. When I think about the work that I do and why I do it, I often imagine it's like if all the flowers and all the plants just held tight in these seeds because they didn't want to ask what they wanted. I want to live in a world where everything is coming to life. I want to live in the world where all the beauty different from mine is in bloom and in bloom and in bloom and feeding the blooms of the future. So that's where this journaling exercise can take us. I see a direct connection. Trust me on this. Your desire is a good thing. Take good care. We'll talk to you soon.